Hello and welcome to Multiform. Every week we get together to talk about the latest Xbox news, rumors, and the games we've been playing lately. New episodes post every Monday morning. Well, usually. This week it posts on Tuesday morning because I am traveling. And you can email the show if you'd like to at questions@multiformpodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you. Or you can add us on Twitter at multiformpod. This is episode 248. I'm your host, Tim Shelton. I'm joined by my brother-in-law, the one and only, he can only do all the law, Spencer Rain.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about it earlier today. I feel like the only time we've ever moved an episode a day or a couple of days has either been because of a holiday or because one or more of us was traveling. So we usually have good reasons. It's not just, we weren't feeling it. There's usually a valid reason.
Yeah, that's true. Especially for being a small hobbyist podcast that is not a career, you know, like it's not like we're sponsored by huge sponsors and making millions
of
dollars.
Or have a Patreon or anything like that.
Yeah. We're doing this for love of the game. Yeah, I'm traveling. I'm using my mobile podcast studio, as I would call it, but it's my travel mic, my travel laptop. And so my audio quality is probably slightly different. This room's a little more echoey than my normal
setup. It sounds all right so far.
Okay, well, that's good. This mic is better at suppressing like auxiliary sound. It's more of a stage presence type mic. So hopefully that comes out okay. Okay, a lot to talk about this week. I actually cut like way more stuff from the show than I normally would because sometimes I include stuff that isn't really of interest to our cast, but I include it because it's newsworthy and, you know, we can give an opinion on it. But some of that stuff I cut this week because there's enough stuff that is of interest to talk about that I felt like I wanted. And I like to keep the show to a tight hour and a half. I don't want to run 2 hours, 3 hours. So that's how we got here. And I did not order them really this week. I did drag a few of the smaller stories to the end, but I didn't do like I usually do and just put the biggest, baddest story at the top, because honestly I kind of feel like we're on even playing field with all of the stories this week, although the first one is probably the biggest one of the week, which is number one, Mortal Kombat 1 has been confirmed and announced officially. The trailer's out now, which, by the way, you should check out that trailer if you're listening to this, because it's insane, very rated R, like totally over the top, as Mortal Kombat is, fatalities in the trailer, but it's amazingly how intense and over the top they are with those after, what is this, 12 games? And they still find ways to knock our socks off. I don't even know where to start on this. It's the weirdest thing, and I tweeted out about this, is I feel like Battlefield, Mortal Kombat, the Fast and the Furious saga, and Xbox are all like in a battle over who can have the absolutely most confusing numerical naming scheme. Because now you have two Xbox Ones, the original Xbox One and the Xbox One. You have three Mortal Kombat Ones because you had two games named Mortal Kombat where the one was implied, and now you have a Mortal Kombat One. And then Battlefield and Fast and Furious speak for themselves. They're absolutely ridiculous in their numbering schemes as well. I guess it's some sort of prequel, and it's also a reboot. I'm not really into the lore of Mortal Kombat. Gus is probably the biggest fan of Mortal Kombat on our show, and he's not able to be here this week, also due to travel, although his is more urgent in that he just traveled today, so that's why he is still in the process of getting his life back together. Before we get into any more about it, Spencer, what was your initial reaction? Did you check out the trailer? Any interest? And what do you think of this whole like reboot prequel?
You know, you skipped the games we've been playing.
Why are you just now telling me this?
Because I wasn't going to interrupt you.
You should.
You can talk about, I mean, I don't have, you're right. Gus is the, our neighborhood, Mortal Kombat aficionado. And yeah, it's pretty intense. I saw a lot of people getting made fun of on Twitter because they were like, man, I don't know if I can play a game like this that's this violent. You know, it's starting to make me feel a little weird. And other people were just like, it's a video game. Like, it's not real life. But
I love John Wick 4.
Yeah, I do think it's funny the naming. I mean, we talked about this last week where I was like, I hated when Call of Duty stopped numbering their games after Call of Duty 4. Like I wish we were like on Call of Duty 12 or whatever it would be now. Although it makes sense we wouldn't be with them because they did do a reboot with like Modern Warfare in 2019. So it, I guess that's not quite that, but so yeah, I was like, why can't this just be Mortal Kombat 12? Because like,
yeah,
in a couple of years you can make Mortal Kombat 13, which is a great number. It's a great number for a video game. It's a great number just in general. But yeah,
the teaser for this was great. How the clock skipped from 11 to 1, like that perfectly encapsulates it, and was a great marketing like plug. But
yeah,
it's just very confusing. The
I like that. See,
yeah, go ahead.
I like that Jean-Claude Van Damme is a launch skin for Johnny Cage.
That's awesome.
I love when stuff like that ties into real life. Like this isn't real life, but I loved in Mortal Kombat 11 they had the Terminator skin. That was pretty cool. I think they had a Rambo one, or maybe I'm thinking of Far Cry 6, and now it had the random Rambo like stuff.
Remember, couldn't you do Green Arrow from the Arrow TV show in Injustice?
Well,
like,
right,
yes, Stephen Amell,
that's true.
And he voiced
the
character. So like they've done other like live action adaptations in the game as well.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
Different
yeah.
franchise, same studio.
Yeah, but yeah, no, that's cool. I thought there was like the leak of Peacemaker and Homelander from
and Omni-Man,
yeah, from The Boys and Invincible, and then what's Peacemaker from?
Peacemaker.
Oh, from HBO.
Or Suicide Squad and Peacemaker, the self-titled TV show.
Yeah, so that's cool.
Which,
I mean, if that's
all three of those
legit
characters are absolute chef's kiss, perfect fits.
Yeah, I was gonna say like their insults. Yeah, like the insults are just like the stuff that they say at the beginning of fights. Like I can already picture it being pretty amazing, and that actually kind of piques my interest because I've seen all of those shows. I didn't see Peacemaker, but I've seen all of The Boys.
Oh man, you're missing out. Peacemaker is hilarious.
I don't care. It was canceled. If a show gets canceled after,
it wasn't canceled.
It was
the one thing that was in the process.
Oh well,
yeah, it's
the one
thing
they didn't cancel.
He's in charge. It's coming back.
Well, I stand corrected then.
You could make a case that it's the glue holding everything together going forward because there's like,
yeah, because they kind of scuttled themselves. Yeah,
I don't know if it'll tie into the new stuff, but. Yeah, James Gunn, that was a show he worked on after Suicide Squad. So
yeah, I remember that. I recall that. So yeah, I mean, I am not a Mortal Kombat player. Like, the extent of what I've played is either at, like, arcades, or I think I played or watched Gus play Mortal Kombat 11 at his apartment. So yeah. I've never been a big fighting game guy. Like, I loved Injustice. Like, I would definitely play an Injustice 3 just because I love DC. But
makes you wonder if we're ever getting an Injustice again, because Injustice 2 came
so
out
long.
Before
Mortal Kombat 11.
No, it was before I think.
Well,
I think
Injustice came out
not
in 2017.
Sure.
I think 2017. So I don't know. That was 6 years ago, which is a long time.
I want to look up the order of the game releases.
Well, I know it was 2017 just because I was just looking at it in the store because all the DLC was on sale. But
yeah, but I swear there's been, this will be the third Mortal Kombat game. Yeah, I'm wrong. Injustice 2 was 2017, Mortal Kombat 11 2019, Mortal Kombat 1 2023. So yeah, but you know, they used to alternate, it felt like. You know, they did Injustice, Mortal Kombat X, Injustice 2, Mortal Kombat 11, and now they're coming back to Mortal Kombat 1. But I will say, the trailer, I'm not a Mortal Kombat person. I'm kind of like you. I played a little bit in the Genesis and arcade time frame. I don't even know if I played on Genesis. And then I maybe played one of the semi-modern ones. You know what it is? I think I played the cross game, Mortal Kombat Cross DC. That's what it was. And that was like a tease for Injustice. And maybe one of the other ones at one point. And I own several of them because they gave away Mortal Kombat X, I think, on PlayStation 5. What was it called? The PlayStation Plus Collection. So I think I own that one and maybe another one. But so it's not really my style. And fighting games in general aren't my style anymore. I used to really love some of the DBZ fighters and some of the other stuff, but I don't really get into it anymore. But that said, I thought the art style on this looked really cool. They've changed it slightly. Since it's a reboot, it's like an update almost to the aesthetic. The designs on the characters in the CGI trailer all looked really cool. The effects. Now, that doesn't tell you anything about gameplay or the graphics in the game, but it does tell you about art style, art direction, because the cutscenes in CGI and the cutscenes are going to be similar to the, you know, the character designs in the final game. So that looks cool. And I don't know anything about the plot line. So like the fact that it's a reboot, but it's also like a prequel, sequel, requel. So I don't know. It seems like everybody's pretty amped about it, except for the name, which people seem generally like, por qué. But I did see an article posted by, I'll look it up really quick, by Eurogamer, titled NetherRealm's Ed Boon Discusses Mortal Kombat One Name. And I haven't read the article yet, but that headline caught my eye because the quote they have at the top is, it's the beginning of a universe. So the question I have is,
is it a total reboot
or is it a prequel? So the beginning of this article says, while the new game is a reboot of the series, it's not a remake of the 92 original. So it does seem like a full reboot.
Yeah, speaking of the Jean-Claude Van Damme thing, it'd be cool if they could get all of like the classic 80s guys, like Stallone, just nondescript versions of themselves, like Stallone, Arnold, Chuck Norris, you know, Randy Couture, like all basically the Expendables 3 cast, or Expendables 2, I think, is the one that had everybody in it, and just have them like play themselves. Like not the Terminator, you know, not Rambo or Rocky, just like, so it just says Sylvester Stallone, and it's just him cracking like his very random famous one-liners from all of his movies. You can have Steven Seagal like in his like weird like outfit that he wears these days, but he's a little unhinged. But back in the day, like 30 years ago, he was legit. That'd be kind of fun though.
That hilarious video of him fighting off like 50 guys, but it's really just him like lightly waving his hand at them.
Yeah,
like kind of like,
hey, Under Siege is a great movie. It's a good movie.
Yeah. Okay, well, as you so eloquently pointed out, we did skip the what we've been playing section, or games we've been playing, and I guess it wasn't top of mind for me because it seems like 7 years ago since I've been traveling. But actually,
it's only been like 3 days, Tim.
I know. Well, I've only been gone 3 days, but before I left earlier in the week, I played a ton of Jedi Survivor. Like I was knowing I was going to be gone, I was mainlining Jedi Survivor pretty hard, got really far, still liking it. I don't really have an update there. And then I always bring my Series S with me when I travel. It doubles for a lot of reasons. It's a good streaming box, so I don't have to like log into people's TVs at places. Like I've got it hooked up into the TV here where I'm staying, and I can use it to stream stuff without having to log in to the TV here. And I also used it to play some Forza Horizon 5 while I've been here because I wanted to get I forget the name of it, but it's the Porsche electric race car. That's a concept that they have, is the car of the week in the festival playlist. And I wanted to unlock that. So I did that the first day that I was here. And I planned on playing more Jedi Survivor, but honestly, I've been exhausted every day, so I just haven't gotten around to it. But that's the extent of my my game time. Although I do want to say one other thing, which is when I was packing to leave, I was updating the games I had on my Series S hard drive. And I had Jedi Survivor, Forza Horizon 5, Lego Star Wars, and Star Wars Racer, Episode 1 Racer, which is like no space at all. So those three games plus Racer, and that was almost the entirety of the Series S hard drive because it's only like 380 gigs or whatever. And those three games combined were like 300. Luckily, I have the 1 terabyte Seagate expansion drive in my Series X. So I just slid that out and threw it in the Series S. So now I have a terabyte and a half for, you know, games to travel. And I only bring single player games when I travel. I didn't put any like multiplayer stuff on there. But yeah, the Series S hard drive is its biggest limitation, because you really, with the modern size of games, you really only can fit, depending on if it's big games or small games, you're looking at between 4 and maybe 10 if you really stretch it with a lot of older or smaller games, which is kind of limiting. I can imagine that being frustrating for a lot of families that buy the Series S. But otherwise, I find it to be a very competent machine that I use both at home and when I travel. So that's my spiel this week. Spencer, what about you?
Yeah, so I did get Jedi Survivor. I can't remember if I hinted at that last week, but I did get that. I've played a little bit. I just got off of Coruscant, which is like the tutorial at the beginning. And then I got to the first planet and played for like 10 minutes. And then I was just like, I don't want to play this anymore right now. I already like it more, I think, than the first game, just because I think Cal seems like a better character now. He seems like less like a child, which is fine.
Having him be older and more mature definitely helps a lot. And you can throw a beard on him, so he just feels older.
So I already kind of noticed that a little bit. I thought Coruscant was cool. I'm already bad. Like, I already put it on Jedi Padawan, full disclosure. I could not beat the first ninth. I couldn't beat the ninth sister because, like, I just, it was
noob.
It was just stupid. I don't know. I probably could have. No, I mean, that's fine. I'm not good at games like this. Like, I'm not good at Dark Souls either. So I'd probably play Dark Souls on the lowest difficulty as well. So
I'm obviously giving you a hard time in a joking manner, because I think people should be able to play on whatever difficulty they want. Like, teasing people for not playing things on a hard enough difficulty is stupid. Enjoy the game. It's about having fun.
And it takes too much time. Like, even if I was good or better than I am, I would still probably die a handful of times playing on Jedi Knight. So, like, it's just faster. Like, I just don't have time. Like, if I want to beat this game in the next 6 to 8 weeks, like, if I want to beat this game this summer, like, I'm going to have to play on a lower difficulty, like, 100%. I mean, I'm sure I could just mainline the story and, you know, beat it in like a couple weeks, but I'd like to experience all of it. Thought it was cool fighting battle droids. That was neat. I like that.
Reprogram battle droids.
Yeah, that was cool. I like that. I'm already like, man, the shortcuts and stuff. I'm remembering this from the first game. Like the wall running. I do like that you have like a grappling hook now. I don't think that was in the first game.
No, I don't think it was.
That's
because
cool.
You start this game with all the abilities you had in the first game. So everything you unlock to unlock new areas in this game is a new
thing. Well, that's good.
Which is the first thing you get is the grappling hook. So it's the very beginning. It's not a spoiler.
I kind of liked how you can switch your stances. I know people have been talking about this ad nauseum for the last month, that you can like switch between the three stances, or there might be more than three, but I just have like the single blade dual wield and like the Darth Maul double bladed lightsaber. But that's cool.
Cross guard and blaster, the ones you get later.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I like the dual wield the most of the three that I have so far. I have a feeling that I might like the one with the blaster as well, just from what I've heard and what I've read. But
that might be part of also why it was harder on you, is like, if the dual wield is one of the ones that has the weakest defense and the weakest damage, or not the second weakest damage. So it's mostly good at being fast, but it doesn't do a ton of damage and it doesn't block well. So the single blade is definitely more balanced.
Single or double. Single or dual wield. I didn't like the double bladed lightsaber very much. It's just too slow and bulky.
So I like that one because it's great for crowd control. Like, if I wish it was like the first game and you could have them all, like, cause it doesn't narratively make sense. Right. Like, I should be able, if I can break it in half, I should be able to like do single, like you should be able to do them all. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Without going to the meditation pad. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
They did find
probably
a really
make it too complicated
fun...
though, or to like make those controls work.
They also, the cross-guarded lightsaber, they don't like have a cutscene about it or anything, but I didn't realize through reading a review, or I don't know what I did, but I saw it somewhere. Oh, it's in the lightsaber customization. The cross guard, they call the little side things that shoot out, they're vents, basically, like to keep the lightsaber from overheating, from being longer. So like, they narratively justify it as being vents. So it's not actually meant to be like a cross guard. They just need
that.
You
said they do that in the game?
When you customize the lightsaber, the piece that causes the cross guard part to come out is called the vents. And
I see.
Based on that, plus
you're
the
extrapolating
fact that plus the lightsaber is a lot longer in cross guard. It's basically implying that it overheats, and that gives them a narrative reason to have the cross guard piece. So it's almost like the cross guard piece doesn't exist to add like tact, to like use it as a place to like capture someone else's blade in the crook. That's just it's just a side effect benefit of it being like a different, more powerful, longer lightsaber.
Or because it's an unstable blade, that might be part of it too. I don't know.
Oh, I don't think the cross guard is unstable by default. Like,
well, I mean, like the like Kylo Ren's was the original when we first saw it with Kylo Ren. Like, it was because you're right in the new or the High Republic comic and book series right now. Like, they've introduced cross guard lightsabers to be like, oh yeah, they existed. It wasn't just Kylo Ren, and they're not unstable in that because obviously, like, the Jedi Order and the Republic is a lot more probably cultivated than the First Order, and Kylo Ren would have
Kylo
been.
Didn't learn from anybody how to make it properly.
Right.
The other thing is, do you remember how in the first game there were like bounty hunters that would just randomly jump you in certain rooms and it would be like a mini boss battle?
Man, vaguely.
Like, some of them would be just different types of aliens and bounty hunters, all kinds of crazy stuff. Okay, so that exists also in this game, although in the first half of the game, it happens much less frequently. I think I only ran into two or three in the first half of the game. But what's weird is, and I don't remember this from the first game, is that a bunch of them have lightsabers, but they're not Sith or Jedi. They're just like random Joes, you know, aliens or whatever.
That's weird.
That have somehow acquired a lightsaber from a dead Sith or Jedi. Hmm. And so, like, little comments will happen, like, because I don't have you done any missions with a companion? Yeah, you have, because the first mission, the training mission,
with Bodhi. Okay. Yeah.
So at five to eight different positions in the game, you have a companion that you can give little commands to. And one of the times I was with a companion, I believe they said something to the effect of another guy with a lightsaber, or maybe it was even Cal that said that. And it's like, another bounty hunter with a lightsaber, like with a question mark at the end of it. And I was like, yeah, I guess I didn't notice that. Like, why do all these random guys have lightsabers?
They must have just done that as like a stylistic choice, because I don't know of what that would be in canon, like how that comes across.
Well, it might be something you find out later, because there is a whole side mission of killing all the bounty hunters. So, and you can turn in their pucks. Like, so they have a puck trying to kill you, but if you get the puck, you can go and give it to this one vendor and sell it back at a cost for like defending or defeating the bounty hunter that tried to kill you. So unlike the first game where it was more linear and you would just randomly get a bounty hunter, this one has like you seeking out bounty hunters if they're ones that you wouldn't normally run into. Like, there's definitely side missions where you can go off and seek out other ones that you don't run into. So I wonder if when you complete all of them or do, you know, them in sequence or collect them all, if it tells a mini story about like when you get to the end, you find out that they were all headed by this, you know, Sith Inquisitor that was trying to catch Jedi by giving out lightsabers to help fund, like, I don't know. I'm making this all up as I go. This is completely off my butt. But, you know, maybe there is some narrative payoff that I just haven't gotten to yet.
Could be. So, but yeah, so I'm still very early. This is going to be probably my summer game, depending on, you know, there's a couple other things I'm interested in. Like, I've talked about Company of Heroes 3 console. I'm interested in that. That comes out in the next 7 or 8 days. And then I guess if stuff goes on like major sales, which actually I did want to point out that I almost bought there. So I added two games to my wish list this week. Because they're both on sale at great prices. And I feel like they probably routinely go on sale for this because they're old. One is Mad Max 2015, because I never played it. It's $5. It's routinely on sale for $5, I think. And to me, this feels like a game that is pretty good and is definitely worth $5, because it's a massive game. And it's also,
I can,
like,
answer that.
It's good enough that it'd be worth $5. Yeah, did you beat it? I don't even remember.
This is one of two games that I rented from Gamefly.
Oh, wow.
I got like a free 1 or 2 month trial for some reason.
Yeah.
And I rented this and Far Cry Primal were the two games I rented from that service. I didn't finish Far Cry Primal, but I did finish Mad Max. And the best thing I can say about it is it's been many years, and my memory is that I enjoyed it. Thought it was really fun. It really felt kind of like, it kind of feels like a Far Cry if it was third person and set in the Mad Max universe. But some of the things that reviews and critics at the time said of it, like the open world is kind of vacant and stuff. It's like, well, it's Mad Max. Like, what did you expect?
Yeah.
And I liked it. I'd say it's definitely not a 10 out of 10 game. it's probably, I don't know what the Metacritic was, but it's like, you know, an 8 out of 10 game. But I would say I would pay more than $5 is my final thought. Like, I would feel good about my money spent on that game at $25.
Has a 72, the Xbox One version.
I could see that being realistic.
The user score is pretty high, though. It's 7.9.
Yeah, I think it's a little better than that. It is a little generic, right? Like, they have, you know, generic design for Mad Max.
Well, it's made by the same people that make Just Cause, and Just Cause definitely has a very generic feel to it. I mean, Just Cause 2 was an incredible game. I love Just Cause 2, and Just Cause 3 was pretty good too, but 4
performance problems on 3.
Right, and 4 was basically the same game, just a bigger map. Like a different, bigger map. Like, it was the exact same game. I played like maybe 5-10 hours of it. And I was like, all right, I've had enough. I've played enough of this.
Yeah.
Playing 3 and 2.
That said, $5. Yeah, totally worth it. $5.
And the other one is a blast from even further in the past. And this is like the one game. It's an Xbox 360 game, first of all. That's your first hint.
Interesting.
And this is like the one game that every time I go to like Disc Replay or any of those like secondhand stores, I always look for, because like for example, like NCAA Football 14, you can't buy except physical copies, and obviously they haven't made it in 10 years, so there's a limited supply. So they're like $150 on eBay, or if like you go to a Disc Replay, they have it in the glass case because it's like worth real money. This game is kind of like that, but it's not as, I think, legendary, we'll say.
Okay, but
Spec Ops: The Line.
Oh,
kind
can
of.
You not buy that digitally anymore? Oh yeah, no. Of course you can, because it's
well,
on
yeah,
sale.
Yeah, duh. That's why it's not as it's still highly sought after, I think, as far as 360 gen games go. Because I've never
owned that one
it.
On disc.
Yeah, I've never seen it in person at a disc replay. So
that's one that is worth playing because it's. No other game tells a story like it does. And as someone that appreciates video games and podcasts about video games, it's one that you should experience just to know that story. But the combat, the third person combat, by modern standards might feel a slightly generic, but it was not by no means bad. It's decent. It's good. But it's not like... I'm trying to think of a tight third-person shooter nowadays, but
yeah,
it'll feel maybe a little generic by age.
It's old
only.
Now. It's 11 years old at this point, so
and it's going to feel every bit of 11 years old as far as the combat. But it's still good. But the story is the story. Like, let's say the combat is an 8. The story's like a 9.5. Some people would call it higher, but it also it's just like, yeah. And it's, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to spoil any of it, but
yeah,
how much
I know
is that
a little
one
bit
on sale for?
It's $5.99, I think.
Yeah.
So it's actually $1 more than Mad Max.
Well worth it. Well worth it. Well, between the two, easily Spec Ops is the better game. Mad Max is probably going to take you longer to beat because it's open world, but it's not like other open world games where the whole world is populated because there's plenty of desert and, you know, those caravans of people in truckers trying to run other people off the road to steal their gas or whatever.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk about, so I played one of the things this week of note, but then I have two other comments about the Xbox store that I want to throw out there.
Go.
Which one do you want me to hit first?
What else
played,
you play this week?
I played episode 1 Racer, Tim, you know that, but the
I know I
doesn't.
Do.
Yeah, I played episode 1 Racer. I already uninstalled it. I got through.
Man.
I didn't even finish the amateur circuit.
It doesn't take up any space.
I don't know
why you bothered.
I know. It's like 800 megabytes. It's more than GoldenEye was, because that's like 300 megabytes. But yeah, it's like 800 megabytes. Yeah, I don't know. I did the first like 5 races and I was like, all right. And I had done like a couple practice races because I was like, I just wanted to see what it was like. And then I got an achievement immediately. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to play actual races.
Man, I'm actually contemplating getting the 1,000 out of 1,000 for it.
I mean, you could. I think it'd be pretty easy to.
The hardest thing is there's a couple. I don't know how hard it is to use Sebulba's gun to take people out. And then there's another one for fully upgrading a pod racer, which means you have to collect money and you can't get infinite money because it's once you're done with all the circuits, you can't replay them to get more money. So if you waste money buying parts that you didn't need or the wrong parts, you could actually make it to where you have to do another playthrough. And I don't know if I've already burned it. I don't know if I've already ruined it, because I didn't start looking at that achievement until I'd already upgraded like 6 or 7 things.
Yeah.
So we'll see if I get it. I may end up getting like 950 out of 1,000.
Yeah.
But I find it super nostalgic because I played that back in the day.
Yeah. See, this is like much like Mortal Kombat. The only time I can think of playing a Star Wars Pod Racer game was like at arcades, like at pizza restaurants. Like that's the only thing I can think of when they had the ones you would sit in, you know?
No, I don't remember that at all. I remember playing this game on N64 when it came out, and then playing Revenge on PS2, and that's why I bought Revenge on PS2 when it was on sale on the recent PlayStation sale, which isn't available on Xbox for some reason.
Podracer Arcade. It was Anakin's. I never played that. It was Anakin's Podracer that you would sit in. Oh yeah, there's probably some. I could probably within 30 minutes of my house find a place
that's probably super valuable if you have it in working order. I bet.
Yeah,
Star Wars.
Well, there's apparently some on eBay. Let's see, $5,995 on eBay. So there you go. Let's buy it. Let's pull our money and buy it.
Okay, now the two things about the store.
Yeah, okay, so I'll start with one that I think is less interesting. So I was talking about recently how Starfield isn't listed on the store yet because I was just kind of scrolling through it just to see what I could add to my wish list type of a thing, which I didn't add anything. But I did notice that they're rebooting Lords of the Fallen, which
it's like a sequel, prequel.
But it's called the same thing. It's the same name.
Well, no, it's Lord of the Fallen and Lords of the Fallen.
Is it singular? Hold on.
Maybe they renamed it, but the sequel was going to have one more letter, and then they might have changed it.
All right, because it came out in 2014. I only know this because of a later news story that it came out in 2014. Where'd it go? Okay, well, whatever. Still, Lords of the Fallen and Lord of the Fallen. 9 years later. Okay, Lords of the Fallen was the 2014 game. Lords of the Fallen.
Yeah, here it is.
You're telling me
the new one is the Lords of the Fallen. They added a.
Okay, so it's like the Fast and the Furious.
Yes, it's Fast and Furious. Fast and Furious, and the Fast and the Furious is number one and number four.
Okay, so I'm not crazy. I thought when I saw that, because it comes out in like October or something like that, and you can pre-order it. I saw that and I was like, wait a second. Doesn't this game already exist? Like, how is that allowed to have the same name? But
Hang on. It may be even worse than I just said. I just Googled it, and here's an IGN article.
I'm telling you.
The Lords of the Fallen, the long-awaited sequel to 2014 Souls-like Lords of the Fallen, has now been renamed Lords of the Fallen.
Okay, see, I was right. It's the same name. They took the off. How is that allowed?
Okay, here it is. This means the sequel. Well, I mean, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. The remake of
this is a sequel. This isn't a remake.
I know, but the remake at least has like
the remake makes more sense. Like if you're remaking a game, you call it the same thing.
Into a technical show. This means the sequel now shares the exact same name as the original, despite only being released around a decade apart. A similar naming debacle happened in February with Layers of Fear, a remaster collection of the series, which was originally called Layers of Fears. Before the S was dropped, and now it's the same
Layers
name
of Fears sounds kind of stupid, so that's probably
renamed it, so now it's Layer of Fear, which was the original game, so they have the same name again. So this has happened twice in the last year.
Yeah, well, anyways, I saw that. I wanted to make a comment because I was like, wait a second, this game already came out. I remember it because I have it. It was Games with Gold like 5 years ago.
I'm sure Xbox, PlayStation, Steam, all of them have no like vested interest in fighting people about what they want to name their game, even if it is confusing. It's like, if you want to screw yourself out of some money, but like people buy the wrong thing by mistake all the time.
Yeah,
like,
we talked about it with Xbox One.
Yeah, with Xbox. Well, even with Xbox Series X, like you go into a store and say, I want an Xbox. You want the Xbox One? Well, I don't know. Of course, nowadays you can't get anything but a 1S or a Series X anyway. Like, there's not 1Xs on store shelves, but it's
my other.
What are they going to name the Xbox Series X squared or Pro or XX?
They should just borrow the name Pro.
The problem is
PlayStation. I don't think they started it. Maybe they did.
PlayStation and Apple both do it.
Yeah.
The The funny, weird part about it is, though, there's nothing pro or professional about them. They're more like high-end, more powerful machines.
In Apple's case, it's just a bigger phone with a better camera. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, which maybe you could make the case that it could be used for production. Maybe. Yeah. Even then, it's a stretch. But like, and then there's Plus, right? Like PlayStation already uses that, PlayStation Plus. And then what's the one... I'm so burnt out with these naming schemes. I don't even know what to say. I just wish they would get it together. I've lost track of the plot at this point. So,
okay, but yeah, my other comment. So my other thing that I noticed on the store here's sorry, my door just got slammed. You remember Lord of the Rings Gollum, right, Tim?
Yeah, I've been pretending it doesn't exist just for my own.
Do you know when, without looking up, do you know when Lord of the Rings Gollum comes out?
I believe it's next week.
Well, it's actually May 25th, so this Thursday. Oh. Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's weird. Yeah. Number one, that's weird. Thursday. I've never seen.
Well,
a game
I stopped talking
Thursday.
About. Okay. Well, game releases have been getting weird anyway, but it's probably because is that their actual launch day or is
May
their 25th. Launch day? Okay.
It's May 25th. It's Thursday.
Sure. Okay.
Well, it's also $49.99.
Budget price.
On Steam. That's on Steam. Sorry, that's Steam. I don't know how much it is on
I'll check while you talk. What else?
But really, that was it. I just want to say there's been zero marketing for this game. I'm a Lord of the Rings fan. Granted, I did not watch The Rings of Power. I will at some point. I just haven't gotten to it since it wasn't great. You know, I wasn't going to rush into it. I was going to watch it eventually.
I watch it. It's
I mean, if it had been a universal 9 or a 10,
fine.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine. If it had been universally well received, I would have watched it by now. But regardless, I'm a Lord of the Rings fan. I've got 3 copies on the bookshelf to my left here of the trilogy.
Yeah, you got that autographed one, J.R.R. Tolkien autograph.
I wish. No, I have his with his original art in it, which is kind of cool.
I know, I was kidding.
Yeah, I wish though. That exists. I've seen it. I've seen those with like first editions with his signature on the front page. But anyways, all that to say, I am their target audience because I'm a video game player and I like Lord of the Rings and I knew nothing about this game. The only reason I know it comes out May 25th is because, like I said 5 minutes ago, I was scrolling through the Xbox store just because I do that from time to time. I go to the new games tab and it was like right there. Tim's putting a 6 up for me. I don't know what that
means. $60.
$60
on console.
That's
but
so
it's not
weird.
70, notably.
Why is it $49.99 on PC? I know PC games have been 50 for a long time,
a
but
cheaper,
still.
But
anyways, all that
we
say.
We do get press releases from them. I just never forward them to you because we've shown no interest in this game.
Well, it looks weird. The art style is a little bizarre looking. That's kind of my problem with it.
It's got kind of a creepy vibe to it.
Yeah. Yeah. It almost looks like Tim Burton-y, like Nightmare Before Christmas vibes.
I almost said the exact same thing. It's weird that we were thinking that at the same time.
Yeah, it looks. That's what it looks like. It looks like something from the Nightmare Before Christmas. But yeah, I don't know. I just saw that this week, and I was like, we haven't said anything about this game, and I had zero idea that it was coming out in May, let alone like. Or sorry, I shouldn't say. I should say I had zero idea that this game was coming out in this half of the year, let alone in May, like a week from when I was looking at it. So that
I'm
was
going
it.
Right now to see.
Also, there's a there's 4 planned DLCs for this game, and it's going and
what?
They're going to be released in a deluxe edition with like those included in the purchase price called the Precious Edition, because of course.
I can't believe a Gollum game is gonna have DLC.
It'd be cool if like one of them was a tie-in to the movies. Like you played like Gollum like as he's doing stuff in the movies.
And it
starts out with
circus.
You. It starts out with you murdering your friend Deagle to get the ring, and then ends with you biting off Frodo's finger and falling into the lava. Spoiler alert for Return of the King. There, sorry, but it's like
I think
70
the
years
statute
old,
of
lim- so it's okay.
The statute of limitations is over.
Yeah, it's 70 years old. It's fine to spoil.
I haven't read the book. Is the biting off of the finger part in the book?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some people are probably jumping at their mic right now that I haven't read the Lord of the Rings. I'm only
seen like
movies.
I said, I've got a couple copies here. You could borrow one if you wanted to.
No, I'm trying to remember the last series that I tried to read that was really old. No, yeah. It's not even that old. It was I read half of the first Game of Thrones book, and then I just
stopped. That's a hard that Kate, my wife, was the same way, and she reads a lot, and she was like, I can't. This is dense.
It's dense, and it's got a weird narrative structure because each chapter is about a character.
It's from
and
their
so
perspective,
it jumps,
yeah.
It jumps around the
confusing, yeah.
And
So another thing is, you know, they're making this game, but they won't make either the Battle of Middle Earth 3 or like an RPG. Lord of the Rings RPG,
well,
like the Third Age. Imagine like a
this is an outside studio, a reforming
true.
Of
that's true. I
people
mean,
that are like, hey, let us can we make a Gollum game? And they said, sure.
That's just so it's of all the Lord of the Rings topics, I don't know. It's interesting to me. I guess it's probably cheaper to make because it's a lot lower scale, and it's
you know what it is in my head.
What
this game is a Plague Tale Innocence with Gollum.
Oh yeah,
because it's mostly in my head. It's mostly stealth.
Yeah,
a little bit of combat.
That seems
like
a
that's what I'm imagining.
Yeah, that seems like a decent comparison. And you fight,
but I'd rather play
instead of a giant rat tsunami that you fight at the end as the boss battle, like in A Plague Tale Innocence, it's just a bunch of like hobbits. It's like a hobbit tsunami.
I feel like so many people don't give A Plague Tale a chance just because they're like, what is this game about a girl in the like what
1350s,
year
1340s, yeah, like, 14th century
it's setting, and it's like lack
hey,
of marketing is it's so good.
Everybody
though.
Missed their golden opportunity to play it. I didn't though, because I played it in March 2020. I played it during lockdown, so I'll always have that memory.
Did you
beat it before me? You played it before I did, because you were the one that was like, you should play this.
Did Gus convince me to play it, or did I convince you and Gus?
I don't think Gus has played it.
Oh, so I guess I was the inciting. I don't even remember why
I still need to finish the second one. I'm like halfway through it.
Yeah, the 60 FPS update has like spurned it to the top of my playlist.
I installed
it on my
a
laptop.
Bunch of stuff this week. Actually, I uninstalled MLB The Show 23 and Red Dead Redemption 2. I said that in our group chat because I still had that installed all these years later because it's just that great. You never know, and you might want to go be a cowboy.
Yeah, there's some games I have like that. There was one like I used to keep the Master Chief Collection on my console at all times, and I finally
me too.
Was just like,
yeah, I have like 10. I only have like 10 games installed right now.
I have 22.
Mm-hmm. Anyways.
Okay. Let's back to the news then in this episode that's all out of order. But it's been great so far. I like it. This one, I don't know that we're going to have a lot to say about, but it is newsworthy. So Overwatch 2 has canceled their PvE content. And the reason this is so noteworthy is, Spencer, do you remember that the whole impetus for them making an Overwatch 2 was they were going to make a PvE content, and then they were going to reboot basically the multiplayer and bring the player base over from 1 and 2, and 1 and 2 would be able to play together simultaneously. But then all of that didn't happen. Instead of PvE, they launched only multiplayer. They shut down the old game, migrated everybody to the second game. The second game became free to play, and now they've canceled the PvE. So like a game that existed almost as a vehicle for PvE now was not that, doesn't have PvE, and instead is a free to play title that pulled people away from Overwatch. The justification they've given is that they realized through development that they needed all the resources to pump into the live game, right? To keep content coming into the live game, and instead of doing slow, like big updates, doing frequent, smaller updates to keep the game constantly fresh and live and going. It seems like we're a far cry from where, do you remember the year Overwatch came out? It won like lots of Game of the Year awards. Like everybody could not stop talking about Overwatch. And now that's not so much a thing anymore. People seem to be a little mixed on Overwatch 2. There's been highs and lows, and now there's this. I will say I haven't seen the biggest fervor over the loss of this. I know there's some people upset about it, but I mostly, from like an analyst point of view, think it's kind of crappy messaging, right? Like even if you're trying to service a certain part of your players, like you had promised something, and it wasn't built into the purchase price because it's a free-to-play game, but I don't know. It's just really bad optics. You should have had all this figured out before you launched the game. Like, the fact that you got this far in and the game's already out and, like, all this stuff, and then you cancel it, it's just messy. And this is the company that Activision, you know, this is being bought by Microsoft, this whole mess. This comes with the baggage. of this kind of behavior and mistakes that they constantly keep shooting themselves in the foot with.
But, I was going to say my only comment or really my thought overview was just more baggage, like you said, and less viability that's being brought to Xbox. Like, what is, Call of Duty is a cash cow, but I would say it's not widely respected. Like, it's not, it's a good game, makes money, tons of people play it. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters. I get it. But there's that. I mean, and you've got Diablo, which is solid. I mean, there's been some controversy with 4, but I mean, I think it looks good.
People are very excited for it.
Yeah,
it seems like.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, other than that, like for $69 billion.
Have to wonder. I don't want to stay on this topic very long, but
World of Warcraft, that's a big, huge, a massive legacy franchise. I get it.
I hope that Overwatch, World of Warcraft, what's the other ones you mentioned? Call of Duty and Diablo. I hope those four, since those are going to stay multi-platform and continue to be cash cows with ongoing live service and stuff, I hope those four are the revenue piece that's going to keep driving revenue on a recurring basis. But I hope there's a bunch of unannounced stuff that Activision has in the works that Xbox saw behind closed doors and was like, let's tie these up as exclusives. But those need to be new things.
Because if you look at the last 20 years of Activision, those four franchises are that's all they've done with any large amount of success. You know, it's not
everything else was little stuff. You remember when they used to put out constant other things? And
they did. I mean, they did a lot of the Spider-Man. They did a lot of the Spider-Man games in the 2000s.
Tony Hawk.
They did Tony Hawk. They did Spyro and
Crash Bandicoot. Yep.
So a long time ago, they were more diversified. But you're right. Over the last 15 years, I feel like it's all just gone to World of Warcraft, Call of Duty, Diablo, and then more recently, I suppose, Overwatch, because Overwatch is obviously not that old. It's
did they have a Toys to Life franchise? Was Skylanders them?
I don't know.
Because Spyro tied into Skylanders. So yeah, they used to do Skylanders too, which was big for a while with a certain demographic.
Yeah,
so.
But I just remember when we were talking about Activision a couple of years ago, when we were talking about there's rumors that they were going to re-release games, or they were going to, after the success of the Spyro Reignited or whatever it was called, and then the Crash Insane Trilogy, and we were looking through their roster of games, and it's I don't know if there is anything they could re-release. There's nothing here other than, I suppose, Tony Hawk was something, but I don't know. I don't see the value.
And they killed Tony Hawk 3 and 4 remaster hopes when they shut down that studio after 1 and 2 got amazingly remastered. I'm still salty about that. Anyway, okay, let's move on into a very closely related topic, which is the European Union has approved the Activision Blizzard King acquisition of Microsoft. They said, here's a couple quotes, Microsoft would have no incentive to refuse to distribute Activision's games to Sony. And then they also said, and even if Microsoft did, this would not significantly harm competition in consoles market. So basically they said they have no financial incentive to do it, and even if they did, it wouldn't matter. And this led to the UK's CMA tweeting out some defensive things, like, we stand by our decision and we're a separate, entity that makes our own decisions. So they dug their heels in. And then several articles have been posted by organizations such as GameSpot is the one that caught my eye, that highlighted the fact that 37 countries have now approved the acquisition of Activision Blizzard by Microsoft. And of those 37 countries, on the other side of the fence, you have one major one pending and one that has declined it. So the EU is, or I'm sorry, UK is the only one to block. The FTC has not made a decision. And then you have 37 approved. And then since I posted this in my show notes, China has also approved the deal. So I'm not sure if 37 was China included or if it's now 38. I think it was included.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. The EU, Japan, not China. The US is still pending. I mean, those are the other two largest gaming markets. So I don't know. It just seems, I don't know enough about this to have a really educated opinion. I just know that the UK has kind of a history of strict regulatory schemes, more so than the United States. So I guess it's not that surprising, especially recently. But I just think it's, when we talked about the UK denial a few weeks ago, it made no sense then, and it makes even less sense now. And then kind of doubling down is just like, all right, I guess you guys don't like investment in your country.
I've heard some, I saw some hilarious memes, which was like, one was the CMA, and it was like, what do they know that we don't? And the 37 other country logos appearing on the other side of the meme. Or like they somehow, I don't even know how to say this, but I saw one organization, I can't remember if it was a country or Microsoft themselves, basically challenging that the CMA, they've already made mistakes in their revenue calculations, which they then corrected. And this appears to be another example of them making some incorrect assessments about the potential and the size of the cloud gaming market. Because their fear is that Microsoft's going to become this massive player in cloud gaming, and there's going to be no other players because they will have everything at that point. But currently, cloud gaming is an additive structure. And if you're talking standalone structures, Xbox isn't even like a top player. I mean, there's not really a top player, and Stadia just failed. So, and then you have Amazon Luna, like they have to have some pretty large market share. I don't know. The whole thing just doesn't make sense. And yeah. Also, Brad Smith, president of Microsoft, I believe is his title. If I got that wrong, forgive me. He tweeted out, the European Commission has required Microsoft to license popular Activision Blizzard games automatically to compete in cloud gaming services. This will apply globally and will empower millions of consumers worldwide to play these games on any device they choose. So they basically wanted they had to make a concession to get the approval in the EU, which was basically automatically approving putting their games on competing cloud gaming platforms, which you think if that concession now being public to get the EU deal approved, the CMA in appeal would look at that and be like, oh, okay, well that meets our needs too, right? If you do that, then cloud gaming, you're not being anti, you know, you're not locking these games up exclusive to Xbox Cloud. Also, Xbox has now put 4 or 5 of their games on 2 competing cloud gaming services because Boosteroid, which was one of the 10-year deals they signed, they announced this week that they were adding Deathloop and a couple other games to that service in the next few weeks. I didn't put it in our show notes because it's kind of weird to talk about on an Xbox podcast that's mostly about the games and the console to talk about the games streaming on a cloud service that isn't in the Xbox ecosystem. So it's just tangentially related. So any other thoughts on this, Spencer, before I move on from the acquisition update of the week?
No, I don't care anymore. Oh, I did send you that. I sent you that thing from Reuters today that gamer lawsuit got denied a second time. It got revived. Yeah. And then they had asked for a preliminary injunction blocking the acquisition during the pendency of kind of the merits ruling. But the judge is like, no. You haven't shown that you guys are going to get harmed by this. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. I did not see a path forward for that lawsuit, just not because of the merits of the case, but because it would set some large precedent that would require a way bigger. How do you phrase it when they need to show that they would be harmed and the stakes and all that? Like, They haven't made a case that they are justified to even bring a case, let alone that they should set huge sweeping precedent for all of like consumer law related to acquisitions. So a judge is going to be very careful about setting a giant precedent based on a flimsy lawsuit. Not saying that his case is flimsy, but like what they brought was not very convincing or sound as far as showing that they had standing to bring the case. So who knows? Eventually, you got to wonder how many tries until they either give up or the judge is like, okay, stop. Okay, number 4. Assassin's Creed is getting a lot of investment. That's what I wrote for the blurb on this one. But then I have a bunch of bullet points, but just funny. Assassin's Creed is getting a lot of investment. So on the recent earnings call for Ubisoft, they said they're going to increase the number of people working on Assassin's Creed by 40% over the coming years. And they said they were doing this to fuel its ambitious expansion of the series and their biggest growth opportunities. Obviously, they've had a rough couple of years. They have 2,000 people currently working on Assassin's Creed. So this would take that number up to 2,800 people, which is absolutely astronomical. And then they give some other notes about this, and this kind of shows the success of Assassin's Creed right now. Spencer, I don't know if you're ever going to be shocked by this, but Assassin's Creed Valhalla has 44% more players than Assassin's Creed Origins and 19% more than Odyssey. So it's gone up 20% from Odyssey to Valhalla.
It's got to be because there's more access or something. I don't know.
It has to be post.
Also, what does that even mean? Support.
I think it's the number of like unique accounts that have logged in to play the game.
I see. Okay.
That's what I would guess. Because players, you know, because that can include on streaming services, giveaways, like all kinds of stuff.
So I might be burned out of the massive epic Assassin's Creed game.
I'm a little like burnt out on the game that's 150 hours. Valhalla kind of broke me. I love Assassin's Creed as a universe, but I don't know that I need as much repetitive content.
Yeah.
What worries me about this is this sounds like too much of a good thing. Like, I know they announced like a sweeping large amount of games, which we were mostly positive on because there was a Japanese game and some other stuff that was going to bring some diversity. But man,
and a game that kind of was going back to the basics. Kind of, yeah. I think, well, the problem to me is like, with Valhalla specifically, it lost kind of the mystery of Origins and to a lesser extent Odyssey, I guess. And the setting also didn't help it, because it seems like in Origins and Odyssey, everywhere you went, there was an amazing vista. You know,
the sense of exploration.
Yeah, there was like a pyramid, or there was some ruins that, like, you knew. Like, it's like that's the Great Pyramid of Giza, or like that is, you know, that is the Parth or the Pantheon or whatever.
Colosseum, stuff like, all kinds of crazy stuff.
Right, like there was cool stuff like that. Whereas
Valhalla, Valhalla, there's more trees.
Yeah, it was England. You know, like, no offense, but England is kind of boring compared to,
well, Egypt. Depends on the time period, but at that time period, it's just a lot of trees.
Yeah, yeah. And like, I love Vikings, like, I love the Middle Ages, but it was not, like, the Norway part at the beginning of the game was more interesting. And, like, when I saw that, I was like, oh, wow, this game looks amazing. But obviously, you know, you can't just stay in Norway the whole time. So I get that, but that was kind of the big thing for me, was like the setting and the sense of awe, if you will, of Origins and Odyssey was significantly higher than with Valhalla, and it just kind of got old.
But hopefully we can get back that with the Jade. No, Jade is Jade the Japanese game, or is that the, no, like that's that the mobile right. game. Jade's the Chinese game, the mobile game. The Japanese game is Red, right? Assassin's Creed Red or something like that. Anyway, that one, I feel like some of that architecture and freshness might bring it back. But yeah, I'm starting to get a little worried. I got a little burnout on Valhalla. I do go back to it from time to time, but it's more like I open it up and I'm overwhelmed, and it's not in a good way. It's not Witcher 3 where I'm like, oh, everything I do is interesting in this game. It's more like, how many times am I going to raid the same settlement to get some resources to build up my thing, to repeat and do it the same? And I think a lot of other people felt that way about Assassin's Creed a long time ago, but I've just generally loved Assassin's Creed. It's partially that it's always a fresh location. And
I will say the settlement building was super cool. I like that in Valhalla. That was part of it, of one of the new things they introduced that I thought was cool. Making your little town.
Yeah. It was new, but it wasn't totally new, because you did have the homestead in 3.
True, but I mean, it's so long ago.
Okay, well, you had the train car in Syndicate, which you didn't build extensively, but you did build onto it. So they've played around with the home hub in various games.
That's another good thing to comparison is like with Syndicate, and maybe I can't speak as much to Unity because I have not played that game in a million years. But I feel like even when they were still doing single cities, which they stopped after Syndicate, those cities and places still had charm that you got in a different way with Origins and Odyssey that you didn't really get with Valhalla. It was just like the English countryside. And I don't know. I also didn't think Eivor was as good of a character. I don't know.
Yeah, I did not find. So I really liked Bayek and Aya. I came to love Cassandra, but I've never felt that way about Eivor. And something about the like dude bro culture of the Viking era just sometimes is like, oh, Eivor, we drink beer together and play. You know, it's just like
Orlog.
Okay. Yeah.
That was the game. Played so much Orlog. Played like a million games of that.
It's funny because I remember when the game was announced, we were really high on it. It's got a lot of cool Viking stuff in it, but in execution, it kind of just ends up being.
Well, that was like, I feel like that was the peak of Viking like interest in culture, like 2020, 2021, because that was when like the Vikings TV show ended. You know, The Last Kingdom was firing off. You know, so I just, there's some other stuff. I forget what, but I feel like that was kind of like the real peak in the culture of having an interest in Viking stuff, which I'm always interested in that. Like, I love them. I freaking play Crusader Kings every week. Like, obviously I'm interested in the Middle Ages, but I don't know. I will probably be choosy with which Assassin's Creed games I play going forward, more so than I have been. Because I have played all of them except for the mobile ones. Yeah. Like the, whatever they're called.
Liberation.
The one that's set in Russia. There's one set in China.
Oh, you mean the side-scrollers. Those weren't mobile games. They were console games. They were just retro.
Really? I thought they were like PSP games.
No, they were console games.
Really?
They're on PC too. They launched on console. I'm telling you.
Well, I know they're on console now, but I didn't think
I mean, they were there day one. Is what I'm saying. I'm going to let you check. I'm not even going to go into the next story before you fact check me, just so that we can make sure we take the audience on you telling me I'm right. Go ahead.
I don't know.
You'll figure it out. How long Blood can I lines. Keep this going? No, okay.
Discovery?
Grand Theft Auto 4. No, why did I write 4 in my show notes?
Assassin's Creed Chronicles.
Okay, yeah, that's what they're called. Right.
It still looks like a mobile game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a side scroller, and it definitely was made on a budget much lower than a normal Assassin's Creed game. I could see they're like nothing like any other Assassin's Creed game. They play more like Prince of Persia's retros game, the older Prince of Persia side scrolling games. Okay, anyway, Grand Theft Auto 6 next year, maybe? ? That's the blurb I put for this one, which is another not very full title, but okay. So they had another fiscal quarter update, this one for Take-Two. I believe a CEO, I need to take better notes about who was the person in these fiscal calls making these comments. I never get their title right. CEO, president, you know, it's always one of those, or chief financial officer, CFO. Anyway, they made some comments in the Take-Two call. Oh, here it is. CEO Strauss Zelnick was who it was. Here's the quote. Looking at fiscal 2025, it's a highly anticipated year for our company. For the last several years, we've been preparing our business to release an incredibly robust pipeline of projects that we believe will take our company to an even greater level of success. In fiscal 2025, we expect to enter this new era by launching several groundbreaking titles that we believe will set new standards in our industry and enable us to achieve over $8 billion in net bookings, over $1 billion in adjusted unrestricted operating cash flow. We know that they have in process. Sorry, that was the end of the quote. Here's my additive to that. We know they have in process Judas, which is the next game from BioShock creator Ken Levine. We know there's a new Mafia game in process, a new BioShock game in process, and a new Grand Theft Auto game in process. It seems like all of those might be coming out next year, which is their fiscal year 25, because it ends the first quarter of 2025. But mostly the fact, the numbers of revenue uptick that they're projecting for next year versus previous years, it's almost like no other game but a Grand Theft Auto could contribute that much of an uptick in revenue. So maybe it gets delayed, but can you imagine a Grand Theft Auto 6 could be on the horizon next year?
I'd love it. I saw, I can't remember if this was on Twitter or Reddit, but a kind of like a proposed map alongside the GTA 5 map. And I don't know if it was based off of like what random people at Rockstar or Take-Two have said over the years as far as like what their plans are, you know, what the
scope. It was the leaked footage. Somebody tried to like build it from that, I believe.
Yeah, and I was like, man, because it's like, it was like 3 or 4 times the size of GTA 5's map, which is already pretty big. Like, I mean, it takes you like, probably take you 25 minutes to drive from like the top of the map all the way to the bottom. Like, I remember when the last marathon or whatever that you could do, it took me like 45 minutes. Like, it's legitimately like 45 minutes to do like the triathlon, the last one. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, this would be amazing. Because I feel like not too long ago, we were all kind of the idea that GTA 6 was never going to happen. Just because...
Didn't want to get our hopes down.
Well, no, it was more of like the cynical approach of, well, GTA 5 is...
Yeah.
Clearly still printing cash to some degree.
Which I think maybe it's trickling instead off. Is giving them the time to just do
and
it.
And the money.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like just we're making money off this so we can take our time getting the next one to be even bigger.
I mean, it'll be roughly 11 years from when it originally launched. So it doesn't seem like it because of the constant re-release, because of the constant kind of injection of the multiplayer content. But yeah, it's crazy. 11 years ago.
Next year. Console generations, one of the few games to like.
Yep.
Well, and I wonder how this is going to affect, because remember GTA 5 had the whole switching protagonist thing, which was like the new thing, right? And then it updated lots of old things like the weapon wheel, all the kind of stuff you get with new technology. I wonder how this game is going to combine the multiple protagonist thing. There'll be some new version of that or a new twist on it, but also they now know GTA Online is this absolute cash cow. So how is, like, it was baked into GTA 5, but remember, it wasn't there at launch on 360. Yeah. It launched it's like weird. 6 weeks later, 4 weeks, I forget how many weeks. And it was buggy as like all get out at launch. Like, people could not get in, the servers were crashing, everything was a mess. So that can't be the case this time. Like, they've had time to prepare. They can build it into the game to where it's fully integrated in the beginning. Like, who knows, for all we know, this could be like a Destiny type world where when you log into your single player, there's other people around, they just can't interfere with your story, rather than having the story and the narrative be separate instances. Like, there could be all kinds of crazy things that they could incorporate into this. I just am so excited. I love the lampooning that they do in Grand Theft Auto. I love the settings and the how it's twists on real life. The gameplay is so over the top. And you come to appreciate it more when it's not like Assassin's Creed and it's coming every other year.
I hope that they can still make a GTA style story in this day and age.
Well, don't forget, the people that wrote all the previous games are no longer with the company. So I'm sure there's a few junior people maybe, or mid-level people that did contribute. And those people might have also written a lot of GTA 6 long before they left. You know, this game's been in development probably for 5 years or more. I'm so excited about this. My immediate thought was like, I really should buy a bunch of Take-Two stock. I didn't, but I really feel like this is the time to do it, because I mean, there's always risk and there's going to be delays and stuff like that. But if you look historically, I believe Grand Theft Auto launch years has had huge bumps in Take-Two stock historically.
Yeah.
And this is not financial advice. I don't know what I'm talking about. This is completely anecdotal. Don't blame me if you buy stocks and lose your shirt. But I was a little tempted, but I just don't have a bunch of liquid cash to dump into stocks right now. I tend to invest fairly safely, by index funds and things like that are safer. So anyway, that is a hopeful thing. I wonder if what the marketing cycle would be on a GTA 6, right? Like, it's going to overtake the world. GTA 4 had an absolutely huge marketing push. So did GTA 5. The question is, how far out are they going to give it to us, right? Because they're one of the few games that absolutely can compete with Call of Duty as far as dominating the entire industry. Anybody will get out of their way. You remember when we did the podcast the first few years, we had Red Dead Redemption wasn't out yet, and we talked about how like people get out of the way of Red Dead Redemption. This is big, way bigger than that. Like, everyone but Call of Duty will get out of the way of Grand Theft Auto 5. And so will they do a full marketing cycle? But the last time we got a Grand Theft Auto, there was still E3. There was still,
it wasn't
like,
that long ago that we had E3.
Okay, but like, and, the, my yeah, point know, is the I entire know. Industry's publishing and
I think
marketing
it was the
cycles.
Last, that was the last Xbox 360 game
different.
That I got. New.
GTA 5 was?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know.
Because it came out like 2 months before the Xbox One. It was like September 2013. The Xbox One was November, so I'm pretty sure it was the last one.
That's crazy. I don't remember it being that close because I remember 100%ing it, I believe. And I had the Xbox One on day one. So did I just not just play my Xbox One for a while?
I don't know.
Because it wasn't back compat back then.
Right. You must have just played it really hard for those 2 months. I just remember because I was at my my first apartment. Like, I had moved out for the first time at college, and it was I remember getting it and playing it.
Oh, you know what it was? Did it come out at the end of 2012 or the end of 2013?
September 17th, 2013. Like I said, 2 months before the Xbox One.
Yeah, that was a different time in my life. I'd only been married a year. I had no kids, and I worked from home. So once I got off work, I could just game in the evenings just for hours. Very different from today. Anyway, let's move on. Number six. This one, we don't have to go into too much detail if you don't want to, Spencer, but the NCAA college football video game is going to be compensating athletes that choose to have their likeness featured in the game. So the landmark ruling several years ago now that college athletes...
I think it was 2 years ago this time
that college athletes could be compensated has now caused the ability to have likenesses of players in NCAA games and to have them be compensated. So there is apparently some sort of opt-in process where they can opt in and they can scan their face and get it into the game, or they can object and a generic player will be put in their place. So, you know, I don't know how much they're compensating people for. And they said they won't be able to scan everyone's face because there's
thousands,
600 teams and thousands of players. But I mean, this is the right way to do it, right? People should get compensated for their likeness being used in a multi
their name, image,
product.
And likeness. NIL.
But this called. Is not my space. I could not care less. Spencer, you tell me.
Yeah.
How you feel about this.
Well, yeah, I saw this past week. That's cool. Obviously, yeah, like you said, for a couple of years now, players have been able to be paid for their name, image, and likeness in NCAA. So it makes sense. Like, if you're going to include them in the game, obviously, pay them. I wonder if, because back in the day, it was like QB number 2, and RB number 5, and LB number 75, or, you know, OT 19. Like, it was just like the initials of their position and their numbers. So I wonder if the people that don't opt in, if they'll just make names up for them, or if it'll be like, you know, Tim Shelton throwing to WR number 5. Because that'd be kind of
They're
weird.
All going to be Key and Peele player names.
Yeah.
Exclusively.
X-Wing at Aliciousness.
That's...
Donkey Teeth. Construction noises.
Construction. Oh my gosh. And those are all amazing.
Dan Smith, BYU.
There's two shows that random clips on YouTube I can never not click on, and it's Key and Peele and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Mm. There you go.
Other thing about NCAA football coming out next year that was in the news a little bit this week is they're focusing on Dynasty mode, which is like franchise mode, but for college football.
That.
So yeah. That's kind of what their center point is going to be, which is good because that's and Road to
single
Glory
player.
Is iconic. Yeah, it's single player. Road to Glory is iconic. But they changed it. Like, Dynasty mode has always been Dynasty mode. Like, but the other kind of superstar mode has been tweaked and changed over the years. So, but Dynasty mode is kind of like the OG, game mode aside from just casual play. So I was happy to see that. And I think a lot of people were. This game, I feel like, has such a, it's taking on a life bigger than its own. Like, it's taking on this persona on the internet of, I think, more, it's like one of those things that more people talk about it than actually, you know, cared about the games 10 years ago or played them, you know, in NCAA football 14. That actually, there was, this reminds me, speaking of COVID and lockdown, there was this, I guess, I don't know if you call it a YouTube channel or what, but they're like somewhat notorious, I guess, in the sports world as far as like being kind of, I don't even know what you'd call them, edgy content, like offensive content in the sports world. And one of the things that they did during lockdown was they had all the guys like zooming in, and one of them was like playing this NCAA 14 dynasty mode. And it was like every Tuesday night, you know, at 7, he'd play his game for the week and like would stream it, and like people would watch it. And he did that all during lockdown. So yeah, people love NCAA football, the game series, but I feel like this is another game that sneakily has a ton of expectations on it that I don't think they're going to be able to meet it.
Yeah, it's a losing game, right? You're going to come out and people are going to expect a whole bunch of it, and it's going to be like, oh, okay, well, prepare yourselves for 7 out of 10 reviews and people to be slightly disappointed. But to be honest, you should be thankful. There's going to be a college football game again.
I will, like, be thankful.
Even if it's just okay, that's better than playing only 10-year-old games that are, you know, 720p and hard to get a hold of.
Yep.
Because they cost hundreds of dollars to get a used copy. So in that case, it's just also more accessible. So, and in 6 months, after the game comes out, you'll be able to play some of them on Game Pass Ultimate with EA Play. So there's that too. Okay, next up, we have Game Pass editions for the second half of May. This story is a little stale because some of them are already out, but what's today's date? Yeah, some of these are definitely out. So Eastern Exorcist came out console PC May 18th. Ghost Lore May 18th. Planet of, I'm not sure if it's Lana or Lana, but that's May 23rd. I saw a review roundup on that, and it's getting 8 to 9. So that, I don't know much about that game, but whatever it is, seems to be strong. Is that? Yeah, that's console and PC. Cassette Beasts, May 25th. Massive Chalice, May 25th. Railway Empire, May 25th. Chicory, A Colorful Tale, May 30th. And then as far as games leaving Game Pass, we have Europa Universalis on PC, leaving May 31st. These are all leaving May 31st. Evil Geniuses 2, World Domination. I remember when that came out. Seems like it wasn't that long ago, but maybe it's been a whole year already. FIFA 21 is leaving. The newest FIFA was just added, though, so that's why that's leaving. Floppy Nights and Lawn Mowing Simulator. I remember when that was added because Gus checked it out way back on a podcast episode probably 6 months ago. So I would say, just for callouts for me, nothing really jumps out at me from the ads here. Planet of Lana is the only thing that I know anything about that seems interesting. And the ones leaving is kind of whatever.
Massive Chalice sounds familiar. I'm going to Google that really quick.
Yeah, that one also jumped out at me. But
also,
I think
Railway Empire, I've heard of that.
Yeah, that's another one of those. It's like, what do you call it? Railway
Simulator.
Like Roller
games.
Coaster. Yeah, it's like Roller Coaster Tycoon, but you're making a Rail Empire. And Massive Chalice, you've probably heard of because what year did that game come out? Why isn't it popping up easily? Yeah, 2015. It's an older game. It's been out for a while, so it's like 7 years old. And while you look that up, another quick one, number 8 in the news, the ESRB has rated the game Stray for Xbox. So it appears this game is coming to Xbox. It was a PlayStation exclusive, looks like probably only for 6 months. I'm not sure what the release date was, but it hasn't been that long. Gus and I both played this. I don't think he finished it because he was playing it on PC, and I think his PC wasn't quite up to the task. I beat it on PlayStation. I think it's really, really fun game. I liked it. Like, the sense of playing as a cat is really cool in that game. So, and it wasn't very expensive. I think it was only $20 or $25. Highly recommended, especially if you like kind of, it's kind of like a, I don't want to call it a puzzle game because you're not doing puzzles, but you are in a way because you're this cat trying to like escape this dystopian city populated by robots and no humans and trying to figure out what happened and get out. So highly recommended. We don't know when it's coming out or how much it'll cost or anything like that. But this, you know, ESRB ratings leak only because, you know, those are self-reported by the companies that are bringing products out. So the fact that they have that there means that it was submitted by the developers of Stray. So it's coming soon. And finally, number nine, our last story, is the 10th anniversary of the Xbox One reveal. The horrible reveal was May 21st. So in retrospect, we will just put a, I don't know what you want to call it, a tombstone, a eulogy for that event.
Yeah, rip.
Still haven't recovered. This is the one most famously referred to by the quote, TV, 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 because they only talked about their TV ambitions and how this was the all-in-one entertainment box and how gaming was basically an afterthought. And actually, they almost didn't mention gaming at all.
Yeah, I remember
that. In the presentation.
I remember that from, well, I don't know if that was just from the May 2013 show or if it was from E3, you know, a few weeks later. But yeah, I just remember thinking, like, all they talked about was Call of Duty, because even back then, because that was when they had the agreement with Activision as far as getting the DLC content first. I was like, I can remember thinking, I was like, all they talked about was Call of Duty and TV shows and like using your cable box as your Xbox. And I was like, I don't care.
Yeah. In retrospect, you know what happened? Well, they made mistakes with the console, but as far as the messaging of that event, what was happening was they were getting out in front of E3 and they were going to talk about all the non-game stuff at this event. And then they were going to talk about all the game stuff at E3, but they should have messaged that. Like when they invited all the press, they should have been like, we're going to unveil our new hardware and we're only going to talk to you about the hardware, none of the games, because we're saving that for E3. And then people wouldn't have been as let down, but then it would have been let down by other stuff because the console had all kinds of other problems. Connect required, way too expensive. No
always
games,
online initially.
Always online. Like, yeah, I was all watching the issues that happened.
There was this interview. It wasn't even an interview. It was like Jeff Keighley was talking to Don Matrick, like on like the red carpet or something. And Don Matrick was talking about, like, he's like, I heard the story of a guy on a nuclear submarine who, when he heard that it has to be always online, was like, well, what am I supposed to do? And he's like, you know, we have an offline console and it's Xbox 360. And Jeff Keighley just straight up is just like, so your message to people that don't have good internet or that don't want to always be online is to just stick with Xbox 360. And he's like, basically like, yeah, that's fine.
What a goober Don Matrick was.
Yeah. And then like the story though about the guy on a nuclear submarine, I was like, so like what? It was so weird. Yeah. Also, that was when the live action Halo show was announced. It was May 21st, 2013. It took 9 years to come out. And it wasn't even Steven Spielberg. Like, it was originally.
He was a producer.
Yeah, but they made it seem like he was going to be the guy on the show.
I think Don Matrick is unemployed because he went from Microsoft to Zynga, and then they were acquired, right?
He's the,
I forget who acquired them.
Hold on. According to LinkedIn, he's the CEO of Prometheus Ventures, but I don't know if that's real.
Well, they haven't updated his Wikipedia page, or I'm not caring enough to read it all. But man, what a goober that guy is.
Yeah, he hasn't, it doesn't look like he's done anything since 2015.
I would say that we are still paying for his mistakes today. Like, there are still things about the Xbox Series X
I didn't realize
that are still part of it that haven't been able to be unwound because of his
he left Microsoft July 1st, 2013, so he left like almost immediately, so he blew everything up, you know, set a nuke off, and then 6 weeks later was like, all right, I'm out, good luck this fall with what I've done. Crazy. I did not know it was that soon, but I mean, I guess 10 years ago I wasn't really paying as close of attention.
When Phil Spencer took over, he immediately like his first action was like, we're going to start selling the 1S without the Kinect. Remember, like, that happened pretty quickly. And then the 1X obviously was in development and all kinds of shifts. But like, even now, like, we're still paying for those, those lack of investments, right? Like, some of the games and stuff that Phil Spencer finally started doing. Like some things he was able to do quickly, right? Like Game Pass, he spun up within a few years. Backwards compat was something that he did within a few years. But games with 5-year dev cycles and getting headcount to do that. And then like, I say this all the time, and I feel like people don't give, they acquired all these studios that had games in process that were owed to different publishers, and they bought some of them out, but they were still multi-platform games. Like Redfall, the most recent, and maybe the first one that is truly an Xbox game, but Xbox wasn't there at the inception of Redfall. Like that game was already going somewhere, and they had a little tiny bit of hand in it, mostly in just in marketing. So like, when are we going to get the first game that came exclusively out of somebody post acquisition, right? Like was a new idea that was empowered because of the money invested. Yeah. Right now, it's just like all the stuff that was out there, and some of it is good and some of it isn't. Like Hi-Fi Rush, good. Pentiment, good. Redfall, bad. Minecraft Legends, I'd put mid, right? Like not great, not bad. So it's, I don't know if we're ever going to get out of this hell. It's almost depressing because as an Xbox podcast, I'm sure our audience is a lot smaller than other PlayStation podcasts, just because we cover a console that is less successful. And it's so weird because I love the ecosystem so much more. I have both consoles. I hate my PlayStation. I hate the PlayStation Store. I hate the PlayStation controller. I hate the shape of the box. There are things I like. Like, I like the games are better, the first-party games. The ability to expand your hard drive is way easier on PlayStation. So, like, there's pluses and minuses, but the box doesn't matter. It is really the games, and Xbox is still dropping the ball there. There's my mini rant. Any other things you want to say about that 10 years ago Xbox One event?
I mean, the only other thing that I had written down was that they had some decent first-year exclusives with Forza Motorsport 5, Rise Son of Rome, which, I mean, I'm not rose-colored glasses in that game, which I feel like there's been a little bit of discussion on Rise recently on the internet. It was a 7 out of 10 game, but it was something unique. You know, we don't have ancient Rome
games.
And
very good graphics for the time.
Oh, yeah, too. That was the thing. I remember that and Need for Speed Rivals. Those were like the two games where it was like, holy cow, this is next gen. Yeah.
Rivals really felt like a launch game, though. It was so simple.
Yeah, but like the weather effects. Like I remember thinking, like driving with rain cars on my car. I was like, holy cow.
Titanfall. Titanfall was so good.
Yeah, Titanfall, which was, technically it was on PC and 360, but still Xbox exclusive. Forza Horizon 2, of course, and Sunset Overdrive. So, for the first 12 months, that's pretty solid.
Yeah, it was. It was actually, you could make a case even stronger than some recent years.
Yes, that's kind of my point was.
Yeah. Xbox One, think about all the stuff at that original reveal that doesn't exist anymore. The live TV, like with an antenna.
Oh, that was so cool.
Continue. With an antenna, which let you like DVR shows with an antenna. They killed that actually within the last year or two. Gone. Picture in a picture. Gone.
Is that what you had like a TV on like the side? Yeah. I love that. Corner. That was so cool. I actually used that from time to time with live TV. I thought it was
You know what the problem with that was? Is, well, they cut it because it takes resources away from the console. Like you really needed almost like a dedicated chip so that it wouldn't take resources away from the game. But it always shouldn't have been split screen because then your game got too small. It should have been an overlay that you could pick like small, medium, large, the size of the box, and then pick where you want it on the screen. Because some games don't use like the left center of the screen, and you could pin it there and watch, you know, Netflix while you play a game. Like I feel like there were uses. It was just a poor implementation. But yeah, like other things that were announced that day that are completely non-existent now. Remember the partnership with the NFL and the NFL app and how you could watch it on the app and have like live stats showing at the bottom and do like all kinds of crazy integrations? That's gone. The NFL app is still a thing, but like the whole Xbox like tie-in with live TV and all that. Like the NFL, I believe, was featured in the presentation.
They were.
At the Xbox One reveal. What else? What else was announced there that just doesn't exist anymore?
Kinect. the big one.
Well, yeah, that's true. Nobody's developing for Kinect anymore. You technically can use it on a Series X with older games, but nobody does. I mean, some people probably do. I had mine plugged in for years, but I finally was like, why am I letting this take up space in my living room?
I had it plugged in with my 1X for years.
With the adapter?
Yeah, with the adapter. I have it upstairs. Yeah,
me too. And then I switched over to using Amazon Alexa, and then I switched over to using Google Home to do voice commands because I wasn't actually using the Kinect. I was just using the microphone in the Kinect to do voice commands. And even then, I don't use that hardly at all anymore. And since they added the smartphone thing, Spencer, I've been using the smartphone a ton. I pull the Xbox app on my phone and use it to turn my console off and on for my Series S in the living room. When my kids need to go to bed, I don't go looking for the remote. I just use my phone and I turn it off. So that's pretty handy.
All right. Well, I'm Spencer Rain. You can follow me on Twitter at Makes It Rain.
And I'm Tim Shelton. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim Shelton or at Multiform Pod on Twitter. Why did I say twit? Thanks for listening. See you next week.
New episodes post every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can contact us on Twitter at Multiform Pod or by email at questions@multiformpodcast.com. If you enjoyed our show and you're feeling extra generous, please share it with your friends or on social media. You can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen.